Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas.
Well, today I get to have a raw, honest, gut-wrenching conversation with Sam Hathaway. She takes us back throughout her life, walking through the unthinkable in high school, continuing on a dark path, and finally finding Jesus. She shares about how coming to experience the love of Christ has completely transformed her life, and now she's getting to see fruit come from a season she thought was beyond hope. Let's dive in. I do want to give a disclaimer before we start this episode that it includes some graphic descriptions of depression and suicide that may be disturbing or inappropriate for younger listeners.
I'm here today with Sam Hathaway. Sam, thanks for being here.
Yes, this is so fun and exciting.
This is so fun. And I am just dying because how many times have I asked you to do a podcast?
A few. A few.
You pretty much turned me down. I mean, the first like 17, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And I think I just wore you down.
Yeah.
Right?
It wasn't the right season.
Yeah.
I was still crying.
Yeah. And, you know, we might cry today, but.
Absolutely.
It's good. It's okay. It'll be worth it. But, okay. Well, Sam, just start off by talking a little bit about yourself. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your fam, your job, your day to day.
Okay. So, my name's Samantha. I go by Sam. I am 33 years old.
You did not even have to confess that.
I know.
And you kind of looked like you were going to cry saying that.
30 like hit me hard. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? I am married to Colton and we are going to celebrate 10 years of marriage next week. Yeah. Big deal.
Awesome.
We have one daughter. Her name is Charlie. She is 9 years old in the fourth grade. And Colton and I were young parents when we had her. She was not planned. We were both 22. And a fun fact about me, people don't know that I was a dental assistant before what I do now.
Nice.
So that's kind of cool. But I work as a boutique manager at a lifestyle boutique in Flatonia, Texas, which is so much fun. It's a lot of fun. I live for a good outfit, you know, and I get to play in home decor and plan events and just be a big party all day long at the boutique.
Party.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
I love that. Well, when I first met you, you were coming to a life group gathering at our house, and this was about 4 years ago. And we joke about it now because I assumed you were quiet and shy, and we know first impressions are not always accurate. So talk a little bit about that and just where you were at in life at that point.
Yeah. So truly, I think when I walked in your house that day, that was like the catalyst of where I met God. I would say I'm like a very sure person, pretty confident. But I was walking into the unknown. I was really unsure of coming to something like life group. I was unsure of God. I was covered in shame from, you know, current and past choices. I was nervous to say the least, you know, but God grabbed me, just by coming to life group. I came in not knowing what it was, but again, that was such a catalyst for just people to really walk with me and for me to be open about where I've been and where I'm trying to go.
And I think you even said that on the drive there, your husband was kind of like, wait, what? We're going to someone's
house. Oh my gosh.
This could be a bad situation.
It was really bad. Like we got into an argument because he thought we were going to church. I think it's a whole nother level of intimacy in someone's house. And he was just like, no, hold on.
Yeah.
No, you know, Yeah. And I walked in again, like so meek and so unsure, so nervous. You know, I've never met these people before. And then walking away, Colton was like, you know, that wasn't so bad. I think we could do it again. Yeah. You know, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's hope here.
Yeah. Yes.
So shortly thereafter, we actually realized that we both used to live in Marietta, Georgia area around the same time in middle and high school range. So take us back to that time and your growing up years, both there and then back here in Flatonia.
Yeah, so crazy. Go Trojans, right? Yeah. My sister and you actually walked the high school together. You know, y'all were in high school together. So in Georgia, we lived right in Roswell and Marietta, and I think I was definitely blissfully unaware of what was going on in my home between my parents then. But what I saw, we lived in a big brick home. We lived in a subdivision that had tennis courts and a swimming pool. I played tennis all year round. You know, was on swim team. Again, blissfully unaware, and just I felt like I had the perfect life. I can remember my mom kind of kept it a secret that we were going to move to Texas because all of my family live in Texas and Flatonia. Like my grandma and my aunt live next door to each other. My other grandma lived in Corrigan, which is just a few hours away, but my older sister wanted to go to Texas A&M. So she kind of told us, you know, not last minute, but that we were going to sell our house, and that was that. And I was angry. I didn't understand why. But hindsight, it was probably for the best decision for myself and what was to come. And I just had made junior high cheerleader, you know, a big deal in my world, yeah. So we moved at the next year. So in seventh grade moved, and it was definitely culture shock, you know. No mall close by, yeah. You know, Walmart.
If people aren't familiar with Flatonia, I mean, Marietta is a suburb of Atlanta. This was Lassiter High School world, if there's any Lassiter High School listeners.
Yeah.
And then you move here to Flatonia, tiny, small town in kind of in the middle of nowhere in Texas.
I graduated with 32 people in my class in Flatonia. You know, I think my junior high class had like 600 and some. And I thrive in a big environment.
You're
you know,
I am a people person.
I am a people. Yes, I am a people person.
I learned all these people's names on the first day. That's depressing.
Yes, yes. So we moved to Flatonia, and things started to unravel. I started to see the cracks in my family. My parents were fighting. My dad couldn't hold down a job. And moving was not something I was unfamiliar with. You know, I was born in Colorado, moved to Pennsylvania, moved to Atlanta, and then moving to Texas. So I wasn't unfamiliar with it. But again, I could see the cracks in my family where I thought, you know, we have this picture life, and then it just started to unravel. So my parents started to kind of process going through a divorce. This is going through junior high and high school. We're moving from rent house to rent house because the first house that we were going to buy fell through. My dad wasn't holding a job, so the money was running out. So the stressors were coming up. My junior year in high school had gotten really bad. My dad was like, I can remember him so vividly just laying on the couch just all day and it just being really dark in the house. My mom working two jobs. You know, I have two sisters. I'm the middle child. And there was a lot of fighting, a lot of fighting. And it was a small house. All three of my sisters stayed in one room. My parents in the other. So it was close quarters, just really loud and angry, you know? So my junior year in high school, again, it's homecoming night. And my dad was now living in an apartment in Dallas with a friend, trying to, you know, start a job working there and just separating himself from my mom, came down and was going to walk me across the stage for homecoming. And we had actually started to build a house, but ran out of money. So we only had a shop built. So when he came, he stayed at the shop and instead of our rent house with my sisters and my mom, because it had gotten just so bad in their separation. So he stayed in the shop. I had told him, hey, you need to be at the field at 6 for pictures. Pictures times had changed. So I went to the shop to tell him that picture times were changed and immediately just knew something was wrong. He wasn't answering my phone calls. You know, the door was locked. His truck was locked. And I walked around to the shop's window and he had hung himself. He committed suicide. Really, life was really slow motion after that. My first thought was, this is not happening to me. This is really not happening to me. You know, so I got in my car and drove to where we lived and ran up the stairs and busted through the door and just screamed, belted, you know, dad killed himself. And then it was really just a blur, you know, my senior year, a blur, you know, the rumors of what was going on in a small town between my mom and him, me just wanting somebody to love me, you know? And it that kind of catapulted just a dark decisions and dark path into college and, to life really.
Wow. So, okay. So you've been dealing with this in these really formative years, you're carrying all of this around, but you're not necessarily even just letting everybody in on it, but you know that it's affecting your life in these huge ways. So talk a little bit about just kind of what that season was like for you and just kind of how you were even dealing with some of that, like depression and this baggage and family tension of divorce and loss and suicide and all just still at a really young age.
Mm-hmm. I was just grasping at anything that I could hold on for momentarily. I was already boy crazy. I'm in kindergarten, right? Like I played house. Michael was my man, you know, like, but I think that moment and really not having a father figure, right? He was out of the house growing up. And so any boyfriend or any man that would look at me twice, just, I felt like if he loved me enough, if I gave myself to him enough, like that would be my Cinderella fairy tale, you know, the bar, alcohol, the party scene, I thrived in it. You know, I was fun. Anything that would give me temporary just relief, weed, cocaine, you know, like anything that was going to give me temporary relief or was like felt good, I was doing it.
Yeah.
And really until I met Colton, even like we were doing it. I met him in that season, you know, at the bars in College Station. We were doing it together, even after the fact that we met.
We'll be back in just a moment after a word from our sponsor.
Well, now is the part of the show where I just get to give a fun shout out to all of those sponsors who have partnered with Woven over the course of this year. So, Literal Insurance, you know who you are on the LaGrange Square. We love you guys. Rhinestone Angel, one of the cutest boutiques in all of Texas, which is coming to you out of Flatonia. Y'all are the best. First Presbyterian Church here in LaGrange. We love that you guys have just partnered with us. And Thrivent Financial on LaGrange Square. Not only have you guys partnered with us, but you've allowed us to use your office spaces for our purposes. Camp Tejas Retreat Center in Giddings. Thank you, guys. Nietzsche Insurance. What a gift you guys have been to us. And then finally, my personal favorite, Scar and Sons. You know who you are. So all of these amazing sponsors, we love you guys. Thank you for making not only the ongoing work of the local ministry possible, but also the ongoing work of the podcast, the writing, and all of the behind-the-scenes things that are going on to continue to grow the kingdom work happening through Woven Ministry. We're grateful. And now back to the show.
You are going through this season. You meet Colton. You guys get pregnant. You have Charlie. You guys get married in that process. And then fast forward to kind of where we started the story. So what has changed in your life in these last couple years, and kind of bring us up to speed to where you are now?
I can remember driving to work one day after we moved to LaGrange. So 5 years ago now. And just be every single day, you know, it's a 25 minute commute, and being so sick of our lifestyle, like just covered in shame. You know, Colton and I's marriage had no foundation, you know, still smoking weed on the occasion, you know, just, I would tell myself, is this really it? Like, is this what it's going to be like? Is this really what life is about? Like, this can't be it. You know, I needed something to change my life. So honestly, I called a counselor from our church, just trying to find anything else. You know, got into a life group, started to go to church because that was the only thing I hadn't done, right? And growing up, I hadn't gone to church, but a few times. So maybe let's give this a shot because I've given everything else a shot. So I just wanted change. I wanted to feel different. I wanted something different than the shame that was just like the heaviness that was just covered me. And since then, everything has changed. You know, to simplify it. But more than that, God has slowly changed your heart. Like, I can't even believe this. Sometimes I say things like this, but like, when you fall in love with Jesus, you want to obey him. You want to respect him. You want to be a light for him. You know, and I'm still like, that's kind of cringy for me, but that is the God honest truth. You know, like when you have a heart change because you found out, especially since I had Charlie, right, that God sent his one and only son to die of a super brutal, brutal death because he loves you that much. How can you not change? Like, he took my shame. And if that does not like want to make you just like live for him, and it's a bonus for you.
Yeah.
Like such a bonus for you.
Yeah.
You know, he took all of my stuff and the first formative years, like of this change, like I kept on saying, like, God gave me a new name. Mm-hmm. I'm not the girl who slept with so many men. I'm not the girl that did drugs. I'm not the girl that would go to the bar Wednesday through Saturday. You know, like, God gave me a new name. And that is like, that's everything.
Yeah. Amen. That's so cool. And I love that you even admitted, hey, it's still kind of cringy. Because you're like, for a lot of my life, I was kind of making fun of these people. Like, who are these churchy Christian
absolutely,
people?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you're like, wait a second, now I'm one of them?
Yeah. Because even today, I still, it's still hard. You mourn your own life, your old life still. It's not like you become this new person in Christ and it's so easy, right? You still mourn your like worldly sinful ways, but it's he works that out, you know? He works that out.
Yeah. Do you remember along this journey of the last couple of years, do you remember like the specific moments? Like, are there specific moments that stand out where you sensed God really speaking to you, or just something that really got a hold of your attention?
Colton and I, right, a lot of this new season, right, things were spicy at home. Again, we did not have a solid foundation. We're both coming off like this party scene, trying to seek something better. But there was a time in our marriage, 5 years ago, where we just needed to separate. We, divorce was not on the table. We were in counseling and we just needed to separate. So I moved to my mom's house for a few weeks and it was heavy, right? It was really, really heavy. And I still had my marriage so very clenched in my hand, right? Because if I can't make this work, if I can't make this work, I feel like a failure. You know, like I had all this other stuff in my life for myself that I was turning towards Jesus. But I can't make this work. And I remember I was just in the Word every single morning, every single evening, because what else do you do? You know? And I remember such peace where you think it would be so chaotic that it's like when people say, you know, he spoke to me, but that peace was like him speaking to me saying like, give me your marriage. I want that too. Not just you, but I want everything in your life. I want it all. I want your husband. I want your daughter. Like, I am going to take care of you and the rest of it.
We knew we were going to call it, right?
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely.
And I'm sure some people listening are too. Well, what do you wish that you could tell your younger self?
I don't know if we have time for this.
That's a loaded question.
It really is. It really is. I wish I could tell my younger self that you are worth more than a boy's attention. That no job, no degree, no boy, no house, no amount of money will satisfy you. Only Jesus is going to satisfy you. Because even now, I mean, we've spoken like, you know, at first it was like, oh, I didn't finish college, right? I was so held up by that. Okay, I'm over that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, oh, I wish I owned my own house, right? Like, nothing is going to satisfy me like Jesus does, you know? And I keep on going back to that, but if I could tell myself, it would be those two things.
Yeah, that's so good. What do you know to be true of God that you have fully experienced in your life?
One, again, that he wants all of you. like the worldly you, the ratchet you, the uppity, the bougie you. Like he wants all of you, the good, bad, the ugly, the nasty crevices in your heart, that he truly wants all of you. And also that he fills in the gap, right? When you need a friend, not only will he be your friend, but he'll send a friend. That he will fill in the gap of your father. That he will fill in the gap as your husband and love you. That he fills in the gap, whatever gap it may be. And I can look back in that junior year and say that really hard season, continued hard season, right? That he has turned it into fruit for my life.
Yeah. Well, one of the funnest things I think to see now, just having gotten to walk with you over these last couple of years and see the way that the Lord has just grown you and brought you so close to him, is now how you are working with and pouring into high school girls. And so talk a little bit about that and just what you even just alluded to about fruit and how the Lord's bringing fruit from some of the darkest times of your life.
Yeah. So I think as adults, I don't always think that we see younger girls or the younger generation, our kids, right, as like people with emotion. So who is really asking, like, hey, what is going on in your life, right? To really see these young girls has and like walk with them with all of the silly things, right? Like the gossip, the boys, the TikTok trends, you know, just to like really walk with them in that and be open about my experiences. Because really, if we're talking about a worldly view, my story is not like this crazy, you know, story. I think it would be pretty normal.
Yeah, there's a lot of common threads to that other people can say, yeah, me too.
Me too, yeah. Absolutely. So to try and just be open and transparent with them of how truly those choices and, you know, pining for boys' attention was just, it led me to this place that was really dark. And to like share that with them it's so fun and so good. Because these girls that I've been able to, just pour into is really like God's grace and like mercy, because they have given me so much, maybe even more than I've given them, you know, to see how full circle this is, that I went through this in my story. Some of them has been like a survival guide, even.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's so fun. It's like,
it's so fun.
You're having fun and engaged. I mean, I know it's hard too. It's like I've seen you, you know, engage with these girls in a way that it breaks your heart, you know, and it can't not, if you're really doing it right and you're really diving in with them and truly walking with them through the things that they're going through. But I've seen it also bring you such joy as you're seeing them find Christ in these places, and it's changing their world at those darkest places, instead of, you know, like you said, where you walked for so long kind of to this place before you were like, oh wait, it can be different. You know, Jesus has something different for me, you know? So
absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much for being here, friend, for sharing your heart so vulnerably and crying, bringing the tears, bringing the laughter, all the things. Oh, I wouldn't want it to be any other way, right?
Absolutely. The real deal.
The real deal.
Hey gang, welcome to the outro. This week's question for Whitney is, what are the most important skills for a ministry leader to have?
Are we defining skills as like the same as giftings? As like,
no, I think like skills are things you can work on and improve. Giftings are things that like you're kind of born with, right?
Yeah. They're more like tools in your tool belt kind of, but like things that you would maybe be described as proficient or not proficient at. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think probably a lot of good ministry leaders are really efficient, and I'm definitely not.
Efficient?
Efficient.
Like they get a lot of crap done?
Yeah, they can just, you know, get stuff done. But I guess, I don't know, I'm thinking of it in terms of like two sides of a coin. Like, I am an inefficient person in a lot of ways. I would say I'm more like relationally built. So my skill set is more in terms of good at talking to people. Like that doesn't really count.
Sure it does. I mean, you're in a relational ministry.
Right.
That's how true. Does that not count?
That's true. So I can talk to people.
And which proves very useful in a relational women's ministry.
For sure. Yeah, it's absolutely a necessary skill. But what that means is that because I am lacking in the efficient category.
You just talk forever.
Yeah, I just talk forever. No, I need to have, I need to surround myself with some people who are very efficient. You know, I have a couple key volunteers on the leadership team right now, and they are like spreadsheet gurus, and they make
love
these like,
spreadsheets.
I know you do. And they make these like beautiful spreadsheets that like the math equations actually work. It's amazing. And they like are color coded, and yeah, they're just like super efficient, you know? But I also think the flip side is true that sometimes if a ministry leader is really only efficient and then they kind of forget to build those relational skills, then they can kind of bowl over people in the process, you know, and can kind of maybe, yeah, bulldoze or steamroll or just kind of forget that relationships are actually more important than the agenda getting done, you know? So
it sounds like what you're saying without actually saying it is one of the most important skills a ministry leader could have is knowing that they are deficient in an area.
Yeah, maybe. Well, that's a good way to put it.
I don't know if that's a skill. It may be just self-aware.
Yeah, self-awareness probably, right? And being able to say, hey, this is what I am good at and what I'm growing in and what I'm working on, and then this is an area that I am not as naturally gifted in, you know, or don't feel very skilled in. So again, I'm kind of blurring the words skill and gifts here. But I think there's a lot of things that you could argue are a really important skill, and then you could see the flip side of it too, where if it's left kind of unchecked or imbalanced, then it needs the other side. And so that's why it's like, I think a good, not just a ministry leader, but a good leader needs to have a good blend of those things, of being able to think strategically and process rationally and work somewhat efficiently, and then also be able to talk to people and hear people and listen to people and engage meaningfully with people, you know? Yeah, but I would say a skill, truly a skill, like a real basic skill that, again, I'm just going to say more broad, that is so important in leadership, I think, is listening. Really is actively listening. You know, I would say that is so hard, even just because.
What'd you say? I wasn't listening.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Where, you know, you can so easily just get sidetracked into what I'm going to say next, you know?
Or they're already thinking of their response.
Yeah, already thinking of their response, but really actively listening, I would say, is a really huge thing. And it goes back to another question you asked about buy-in. The cheesy quote, you know, I've heard my dad say so many times before, of people don't care what you know until they know that you care. And so, you know, as you communicate that you care about them, and you listen to them, then they will, you know, they will in turn listen to you. So that would be a skill I think is really important. I think another skill that I think is important that I also am absolutely terrible at, like, so this is so painful for me, is, we just were talking about this earlier tonight, is what am I bad at? What stresses me out more than anything?
Decision making.
Yes. I think decision making is so stressful. I remember moving back from the Dominican. No, it was, we used to live in South America, and I remember the grocery stores just had far less options. And I really liked that, because it was like, okay, you're either going to get this type of cereal or this type of cereal, you know? And, oh, by the way, the cereal's all like $20 a box, so maybe you just won't get any cereal. And so the decision was kind of made for me. And then I come back to the States, and there's an entire aisle of cereal, and it's all $3. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I make a decision, you know? And so I just remember standing on the grocery aisle for like a good 12 minutes looking around, being like, how am I ever supposed to decide, you know? Do you go with your flavor here? Do you go with what's going to get soggy, like the like slower? Do you go with health? Because let's be honest, most cereal is not healthy, you know? So do you go for like the Kashi and kind of settle for like slightly sweet cardboard, or, you know what I mean? So anyways, the decision, I mean, I was just kind of feeling my blood pressure rise even as I'm talking about that. But so again, the decision making, so because it's a skill that I feel deficient in, it means that prayer is a huge piece of that. And I would say even anxiety producing for me. Sometimes it means that prayer has to be highly prioritized. The more that I pray, the less I feel that you know, everything is just weighing on my shoulders and it all centers around me, and that any little decision I make is going to ruin, you know, the direction of the ministry. Then, so prayer is a huge way I kind of combat that, I would say. And even maybe build into the growth of the skill of decision making. But also it means that I try to, you know, intentionally let some people in on the conversations. Whether it's like, hey, I'm really thinking about, you know, this material. What are some thoughts that you have on pros and cons here? Or, you know, what if this was a theme that we went for, you know, with this event? And what are your thoughts on this? And why? What blind spots maybe, you know, am I not seeing? And that also helps. So I would say listening, decision-making, relational skills, the ability just to build meaningful relationships with your constituents. And it sounded like a very political, like voting word. I don't like that word. But, and then also finding people to help you be efficient in ways that, if that's not your gifting, you know. But yes, I think I like that you said that at, back to the beginning, because self-awareness, I think, is a huge one. The more that we are self-aware, the more that we're able to, again, task other people around us with things that we need help in, you know. And it builds a bigger team, and it also distributes the weight on my shoulders in a healthier way.
Well, even though you're bad at decision making and you're super inefficient, I think you're a great leader.
Okay.
Love you.
To To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown. Recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.